tell me about your whiskey, Mr. Mr. Bisley, the man who makes shirts.
So, Sana, our au pair, has started running because she's quite into a karate at the moment. Well, possibly. So she's like, you know, she does 8K and she comes.
I don't mean to infer you're some kind of abuser.
No, I do have a beard. I look like a scary dude.
You look like man you should run from. Yes,
probably. So anyway, she did 10K and she was very proud. I did 10K and I was like, oh yeah, well, you know, I've done a half marathon. She's like, well, we should have a bet. And I was like, oh sure. You
what
know,
the fuck? I've done a half marathon. Oh, good for you, fucking peasant. What?
Yeah, that's entirely the point. She's like, she's half my weight, half my, like, you know, a fair bit younger than me, and she's like massively improving every time she runs, and she's like fucking taunting me about it. So I'm like, all right, fair enough. So she goes, all right, we should have
employer,
a bet.
So
she's part of the family. So she goes, we should have a bet. Who can run 20 kilometers first? And obviously thinking you are a person that has a job and three small children and I have lots of free time and I will kick your ass. And I was like, sure.
Do you have a car? So traveling 20 kilometers is much faster when you have a car.
I'll take that bet. And she goes, right. So she takes about 4 days deciding what she wants to actually bet me. And I'm like, straight away, I want a bottle of good scotch. That's all
you
care about.
You have to put together out of her measly earnings, that given that you have to make her sleep under the skin.
She has two jobs. She's doing fine. She's doing better than I am. So
you'll be
she
her au pair in a while.
Pretty much, yeah. She should employ me. So she picks out some expensive lingerie, and I'm like, yep, no worries. I'll take that bet. And I sort of organized things, so I cooked an extra dinner so Vanessa could pick the kids up and didn't have to do much. And I went and ran 20Ks, which my body was not fucking ready for. And so I walked through the door on Monday night, like, limping and barely able to stand. And she's like, you didn't. And I'm like, bottle of scotch, please. Thank you very much. So I'm enjoying my scotch right now.
Give me my beer, you cunt.
I knew that was what you were going to say.
Give it to me now.
It's nice. It's nice when people pay up on their bets,
isn't it? Fucking isn't it? You welching pissant.
Oh. So why are you 18 or 12? I can't remember. It's 18, isn't
it? It's at least 18. It might be 24 if you keep carrying on.
I think just with like back
I need
taxes,
to start charging interest like a dodgy loan shark.
It'll be 20. By Christmas, it'll be 24.
Like it'll be like a pallet of little creatures by the end of the year.
Oh, dear.
I'm so glad you finally got one back.
Yes, well, it's very, very nice Islay whiskey, so. Mm. Shall we talk some tunes?
Can you run along my fascinated? Because that's all scotch is good for.
I'm a little bit fascinated by the three albums this week, actually.
Should we start with the new?
Yeah, let's start with the new.
Start with the new.
And let's start with Slow Dive, because
that's
I assume
chronological in terms of the order on the playlist. For those playing along at home, we stick all the albums we're reviewing on a Spotify playlist, which you can find in the show notes for each After Dark episode. And this week we've got Slow Dive, we've got the Afghan Whigs, and we've got the classic album, which we'll get to later in the episode.
And I'm pretty sure that these are all Discover Weekly.
I thought picks. Last week you just took a shot in the dark with each of them. I think you.
I think Slow Dive. I did. I've got a funny feeling the single off Afghan Weeks might have been on my Discover Weekly.
Mm.
So not entirely sure about that though.
So Sly Dive were a shoegaze band of the late 80s, early 90s that kind of disbanded out of lack of interest just before the big Britpop explosion, which was also probably the last days of shoegaze, because that's kind of a genre that existed before what you might call Britpop in terms of, you know, being popular and prevalent. They're probably lower profile than other bands of that space, like your Jesus, Lizard and Super Furry Chain Animal type bands that we reviewed earlier in the year, month. Probably not so long ago we listened to that Jesus Lizard album. Jesus and Mary Jane album. God, all the Jesus bands merge into one.
Jesus and the Mary Chain.
Jesus and Mary Chain. Let's get it right, folks, just in case someone's listening. The Jesus and Mary Chain
have a passing resemblance to these guys. There is...
I think it's a historical
Stoned and Dethroned. Yeah.
It's a historical
These
similarity.
Guys are a lot more whimsical and... ambient, but the way they distort the lyric and... there's some conceptual similarities, I think.
Yeah, these guys have an element of sort of ambient trance to them, which not a lot of their competitors, not a lot of their, what's the word for people who are around at the same time?
Yes, contemporaries.
Contemporaries is the word I'm looking for, thank you. Contemporaries didn't really have that sound as much. And to certain elements, they almost have it's a very early 90s sound and almost arcing back to an 80s sound. In some places, they sounded like Dunedin, like a Dunedin sound band, which was a genre that came out of this joint in the 80s, which did these kind of jangly, ethereal, dreamy, spaced out kind of pop songs, which this album is end to end. That's exactly what it is.
There's a song on the Crow soundtrack by a band called Medicine, I think it is.
Because they're a different sort of band entirely.
Is Medicine and Robin Guthrie, I think, but it has that same sort of dreamy vocal. It's a little bit more rock sort of guitar, like it's a rock guitar under it. But that's as soon as I started listening. So. I really get into moods where I want to listen to this type of music, but they're not moods that hit me all the time. And if I listen to this album when I'm not in the mood, I just think this is crap.
Tedious.
It's pretty tedious. But if I'm listening to it on headphones or if I'm studying or I'm in a particular zone, I really enjoy this style of music. It's a type of music that is very specific to a type of mood that I need to be in. And when I'm in that mood, I love this sort of music. But I listened to this album.
How fucking wasted would you have to be in the space?
I'm trying to learn to code at the moment. I'm trying to teach myself to code. And when I get deep into that, like trying to understand concepts that my brain is not I don't have the background to grasp. Like I'm in that. I'm really concentrating quite hard and I just need some sort of audio background to suit, like to balance that sort of grasping out. This is the sort of stuff that I like listening to. I don't want anything that's going to make me focus on the music. I want something that's something very layered that's just going to sit in the background and is sort of
low-level neural stimulus.
Yeah, like sort of fuzzed out. When I was listening to it in the car on the way home this afternoon, I got to like track 4 and I just suddenly got really bored. It's just like because I was sitting there listening, focusing my whole attention on the music and it got boring after a while.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's meant to be listened to that way. I think it is actually meant to be listened to in that sort of drugged out, zoned out state. I think that's how it's meant to be experienced. I could be wrong. Maybe there are people that just like focusing on it, but I don't.
We've talked about this before in terms of music that's sort of front of mind in front of your experience, and also music that sort of sits in the background of your experience, and you can enjoy along with doing other things. I mean, I think this is probably a very well crafted and executed example of the genre, and yet it is tedious as shit, and I fucking hate it. Slow dive literally feels like a slow death. It felt like drifting towards the light. It really just felt like the lights were going out, and I was just sort of drifting away. And I just felt so just overwhelmingly unpleasant. And it's not meant to be. It was sort of the lack of anything to hang on to just felt so overwhelmingly unpleasant. I was like, can you give me something? Can you not just do the same droning fucking pissant ethereal riff for 6 minutes? Because that's I get nothing out of this album.
Yeah, the first time I listened to this track three, I was like, oh, I don't think this is really going to be the Dr. Yobbo's cup of tea.
So you got to stop worrying about what I think.
Oh, no. Look.
And this stuff work. There are elements of this sort of sound that work brilliantly. I mean, if you take, say, the fucking Dandy Warhol's earlier output, the first track off the Dandy Warhol's album, what is it? The Dandy Warhol's Come Down, I think it's called. It is like 7 minutes, and they just sort of go into these kind of almost incantations of these big, these riffs that sort of just wallow and roll and sort of bask in their own goldenness and just sort of huge harmonies and building choruses and stuff that just sort of go on and on forever. And you can get into that kind of meditative state that you're talking about. But like you, I could never get into the state where this album felt comfortable.
No,
it felt irritating.
I don't think it's a... I enjoyed it, but I don't think it's a great example of the genre.
Yeah, I couldn't judge on that, but I know I fucking hated it. I never wanted to hear it again after I'd listened
to it. Go listen to that song on the Crow soundtrack and tell me what you think of it. That'd be really interesting because...
The Black Crow soundtrack?
Yeah. Anyway, so... The Afghan Whigs in Spades, which is another old band.
Another old band, because let's face it, it wouldn't be an album pick from you if it wasn't an old band making a comeback. So these guys, so last week was the Primavera Sound Festival in Barcelona, and Red Bull TV had quite a lot of it live. And these guys were on the on their live stream, but I deliberately didn't watch them because I hadn't heard the album at the time. And then I listened to the album and I didn't want to go back and listen to them because they were not that interesting on first listen. But on subsequent listens, they got a little bit more interesting.
But interesting never, because I...
Never so I, much... I, no, I, go ahead.
I think I started at a greater appreciation than you. Like I listened to it the first time. I went, I quite like this. But... every time I've listened to the album since, I'm like, I find this really, really compelling. And there's little sort of bits and Easter eggs of things that they've included in their music that I find really interesting. Like, I think it's in
You think you disagree with me, and then you went on to say exactly what I just said. Which is the first time I listened to it, I thought it was shit, and the more I listened to it, it was more interesting.
No, I'm totally agreeing with you. I find it interesting that even though you started at, like, you thought it was crap and I thought it was okay the first time.
I'd listened to it straight after Slow Dive, and I was already in that kind of catatonic,
tongue-lolling.
I was desperate for it to be better than it was, and I was like, well, this is shit too! Fucking Bezo! What a cunt!
Look, I think it's Copernicus. Is it Copernicus or Light as a Feather? One of them has like little tiny Stevie Wonder type guitar licks in the background.
Yeah, it's not
like full Superstition sort of in the foreground. Yeah. It's like just sort of hidden, and especially when you listen on headphones, it's like, wow, I didn't pick that up the first time I listened to it.
You dropped a bit of knowledge from their bio, which I assume was Spotify. It said, you know, they were originally like a garage punk band from the same sort of space as Mudhoney and contemporaries. But they very quickly got out of that space and adapted a lot more kind of old school R&B and soul influences. And obviously in this album, you can see that popping up. Copernicus and Light of a Feather have certainly got a lot more energy and groove than some of the... I think this album actually gets better the deeper you get into it. I think some of the later tracks are particularly quite good. This album was the inspiration for one of my worst jokes on Twitter this week, apart from all the other ones, which was because this album was released on the Sub Pop label, and I said quite a lot of Sub Pop albums are good, but to be honest, a lot of them are Sub Poptimal, and that got more RTs than it deserved. That really did.
I did see that and laughed at it in sort of, I thought, oh, that's a pretty good joke. And then when I was doing a little bit of research on this band, I was like, oh, they're from Sub Pop Records. And I went, okay.
But then again, the reason I thought of it, because all those Soundgarden albums we were listening to a few weeks ago, they were all on Sub Pop. So
I think we're Garbage on Sub Pop.
I thought they were on Geffen, but maybe Sub Pop was an imprint of Geffen.
Yeah.
What does it matter? Everyone, they've all gone broke by now.
Yeah, that's right.
Although I think Sub Pop still lives on. Maybe it's just an imprint.
So I've added this to my list of albums to review for the end of the year because the way that it's grown on me in a week, I want to see how it. I'm going to come back to this over time and see how it plays out over the year because I think it's an album that's got a few hidden depths.
It does have more depth than you think. I know that when I listened to them early in both of these albums early in the week and you know hated you know didn't really engage with the first at all and the second I didn't really think much about and a few days later I came back and I didn't have a lot of time so I did like a skip listen. You know, you listen to the first 30 seconds then you skip on to partway through the song and you go, yeah, I know how that song works. I know how that struck. You know, I know how their verse, chorus, verse structure works. I know, and you can kind of get a grasp for what the song is and does. So I do that through Slow Dive and, you know, wanted to go crawl under a bus. And then I started doing the Afghan Whigs and I started thinking as I was doing it, this album's got more to give than I can pick up in this context. I need to come back to this album. I need to listen to it again. And when I did, I thought, yeah, actually there is a little bit more here than what I gave respect for. I don't think it'll be a top album of the year, but it does have more than just a surface scratch we'll give up to you.
Yeah, I've
got
a feeling that
this album's called In Spades, and it's not Ace. That's all that needs to be said.
No, it's definitely
not. It's not the Ace of Spades. It's not the only card you need.
It's got a very metal type cover too.
Yeah.
Which is really weird for the sound.
It is not what it says on the tin.
No, it's not what it says on the tin. No. So shall we...
Albums that say what they are on the tin would include Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, which the cover of which is famous, I think, with the band and the floral arrangement and everybody in history all around them. Of course, there was a rather poignant takeoff of that last year where they put every celebrity who died during the course of 2016 and just kept having to update it through December as they made it. Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band is an album by a band called the Beatles, who were really big when your grandparents were kids.
Can I start with a little rant against older, bigger bands?
I think you need to. If you want to come in off the long run, then take the new ball up the hill into the wind.
Well,
here you go. What field do you want?
It's the Beatles. It's U2.
Yeah, you move over there. Yeah, Over Gully. Short Third Man.
It's all of those bands that have digital content. And it's not just digital content. It's like it's old content that's very popular that's been re-released. Can you just fucking put the album as it was released in period on digital media? I am sick of these fucking 90 track fucking albums where we've got to go through and go, okay, what is the actual
testify,
album?
Motherfucker!
What is the actual album as it was released when
I
it was released?
I had to look it up on fucking Wikipedia.
Oh my God. I'm like, am I listening to the right version of this album? Is this a...
Well, that's actually like, tricky has, because each of them had like an American version remix. And a UK version. Yeah, yeah. So I went back and listened to the... And the thing is that a lot of these were recorded in mono and then they were fake stereoed and then there's been 47 different versions of them. One of my followers, one of my men, God, I can't remember what his handle right at the moment, but he's really big on only a paper moon. He's very big on old vinyl and knows all about those sort of version stuff. But the fucking... There's been a whole lot of shit go on with the remasters and the remixes and the fake stereo and the real stereo and the mono and a whole lot of version issues that you have with this sort of stuff. But the album, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, basically is meant to finish with A Day in the Life. Everything else okay. beyond that was crap, was add-ons in terms of the 47 version, the 47 thing. But that's kind of the problem is that you get all this superfluous crap. It's like, does this help? What's this adding? Hearing four different takes of fucking Strawberry Fields Forever, which isn't even on the fucking album. How's that help?
It's just baffling. It really is fucking baffling.
Which makes it hard to actually determine. Because the question we were asking was that Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band has turned 50 last week. It is held up by the boomers as the greatest by many boomers. Let's not paint them all in the same brush, as the best Beatles album, or at least one of the most significant. But the question was, as we said in the show notes last week, is it actually any good?
Yes. Well, who'd like to go first?
That's sort of the question. That is sort of the question. And what do you mean by good? Do you mean it was good then? How does it compare to the albums of 1967? How does it compare with other Beatles albums? How does it compare with other Beatles albums of that era? Because the Beatles are well known to have had kind of two phases to their career, that kind of early pop R&B, fucking Love Me Do, Just Do, and those sorts of songs, and then suddenly they discovered drugs and started producing stuff like Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band in sort of 1966-67. How do they compare to their contemporaries? How do they compare to... And does it stand up today? And these are all questions that we will now fail to answer because we've had too much to drink.
So I was trying to put this into the context of when it was released. Like, was this groundbreaking when it was released? Because
years ago, and it's so hard to do that.
Because, yeah, it's like, you know, like it was, you know.
That's not like fucking bad. This is no longer our parents' music. This is our grandparents' music. There was somebody someone on Twitter was complaining that somebody didn't know a fucking Beatles lyric reference. And I'm like, it's 50 years old. It'd be like asking me about Glenn Miller. I don't fucking know.
The niche music back then was probably Charlie Parker and whatever obscure blues artists were around. Like,
well, the thing is, the niches didn't exist.
Yeah.
In the same kind of way that they do now. I'm so glad we live today when you don't have this massive funneling of the mainstream such that there is only the pop charts.
That's right. Everything, the fact that the music industry is so splintered and so disparate actually works in favor for people like us because we can find stuff that's not that popular but we find really compelling.
I think that's why this album is remembered the way it is. It's like this massive departure into psychedelia. When if you actually listen to it track by track, it is not a massive departure into psychedelia.
It's pretty fucking poppy.
It is just the Beatles doing what they do.
Like, okay, I really like the start, Sgt. Pepper's the title and track. Little Help from My Friend. Yep. Yeah.
The title track is worth playing twice because they'd bring it back at the end, and I think the reprise is actually better. But I think with a little help from our friends, Sorry, you're wrong.
It's a good 1-2 punch. It's a good strong opening to the album, and I'm talking about not in context. I'm talking now as an album that exists in 2017. That's a good 1-2 punch.
But isn't it hard to put out of your mind that Joe Cocker did a better version of it?
Yeah, probably. But then it starts to go downhill. Into
I like Lucy in the Sky of Diamonds because that's kind of that's a flagship Piccadilly song.
It's it's held up as this, but I just find it was a pretty straight down the line pop song as far as I was concerned.
Yeah, it was more the effects they played around with to make it sound like. Getting better just reminds you that they were really good at writing ad jingles. Because you think about much of this stuff got rebirthed as jingles, and you think, oh, well, that's unfortunate. It's all been rebirthed as ad jingles. Or you think, really, all they were doing was writing ad jingles in the fucking first place.
When I'm 64 is fucking the awesome. It is the I Piss Alone of this. It is them taking the piss. Like, I Piss Alone is Regurgitator taking the piss. It's like the song that Regurgitator are laughing their fucking asses off while they record it, going, I can't believe they're going to let us put this on the album. And this is what the Beatles were doing. This is like, I can't believe they're going to let us put this crap on the album.
It gets you to the problem with late-era Beatles, doesn't it? Because like all late-era bands, there's nobody in the room telling them no. There's nobody saying, this isn't necessary. Make something better.
I find Good Morning a bit the same. It's like, did this really need to be? And look, maybe in period it was seen as fucking groundbreaking, but it's just not that
good. I don't understand why it would be seen as groundbreaking, but we'll get to that later. But here's the thing. So the Beatles released, what needs to be said about the Beatles? They produced some of the best music of that era. That was ever put on wax. Thanks very much, Jay from the TVA podcast. They had like 18 number ones. That's the basis of that number ones album.
That's a pretty deep cut for our audience, mate. Well, that is a really deep
depends
cut.
Depends whether this audience is the same as that audience. So they had a lot of number ones. Number ones was their currency. Problem is, they were, and this is, remember on the other podcast I said I was going to go cross sport? So they got a lot of hits, but it kind of feels in reflection that it was like Bill Russell Celtics style rings. You know, oh, sure, they got a lot of titles. What was the fucking competition like in those days?
No salary cap in those days?
No salary cap. No, they weren't recruiting players from fucking Germany and Argentina in those days. It's a bit like the St. George rugby league teams of the same era as the Beatles. What was the competition like? I mean, this is the problem. They're remembered as these fucking behemoths, the greatest. You can't speak ill of them. And they recorded great pop songs. But there just wasn't the competition there is now. And I feel like they've got an elevated position in pop culture simply because they were, to a greater or lesser extent, the only game in town. The other thing about them... Sorry, you're wrong.
No, you... Look, finish your rant.
And then
I will respond.
Particularly at this time of their era, just to keep the cross sports comparisons on. And I listened to a couple of albums either side of this. I listened to Revolver again, and I reminded myself about the White Album. And I want to talk about the White Album, which was 1 year later, 1968. The White Album has some fucking tremendous songs on it. It has back in the USSR and various others that are just some of the best stuff the Beatles have ever done. There's 30 songs on that album. Late-era Beatles are basically late-era Kobe. Sure, they're getting their fucking numbers up, but do you want to see how many fucking shots they're taking to get those numbers up? And there are so many bad shots. There are so many contested hand-in-the-face fucking long twos. The Beatles are basically washed-up, suboptimal Achilles Kobe by 1967-68.
It's the like I've talked about it before on this pod, but that the pop culture pod I listen to, and they talk about J.K. Rowling and the fact that she was turned down so many times early in her career, but by the time she got to the fourth book, she was so famous, and she's like, "Well, fuck you, you guys didn't have time for me then. Why am I going to listen to an editor now? If I want to write a 10,000 fucking page epic, you guys are just going to have to cop it because it's going to sell like crazy."
Exactly.
And that is...
And in order to record 12 albums in 7 years, you have to literally record every idea you've ever had and put it on wax and get it out there. And it's very clear that nobody was saying, stop. You need to stop. Yep. That song, and that song are B-sides for singles that you should never record because they're terrible. Don't do that.
Mm.
And that's where they were. No one was in the room telling them that.
It's almost like us. If we had an editor, we'd probably produce much better content.
Yes, but we're not the biggest pop band in the history of music.
That's true.
We are two drunks standing in a corner. But the other question, I mean, this album dates horrifically. And partly because of novelty songs. The thing is that they were very big on novelty songs and narrative songs and twiddly tosh and nursery rhymes and ad jingles and stuff and vanity projects. I mean, when you've got, at that stage of their career, they're trying to, you know, George has to have his songs, Ringo has to have his song, and fucking John and Paul have to have the same number of songs and all that sort of stuff. So it actually becomes a massive fucking mess. And this is why, you know, when we've asked friend of the pod, Adam H. Photo, you know, what's the best Beatles album? He said, the number one's album.
Mm.
Because their output, you can't question, was fucking tremendous. It's just absolutely. Everything
and
else.
And
they've never, can I put it on record, they never made a good album.
It's a little bit like the Blur phenomenon, isn't it? Where you look at all their albums and you're like,
can you say that word again?
They've Blur.
No, the other one.
Phenomenon.
Say it again.
Phenomenon. It wouldn't be an After Dark unless you're singing.
There's a car alarm going on in your background too, I think.
You think of Blur and you're like, oh, I really like this album. And then you go and listen to the album and it's like, oh, man, there was six really fucking good songs on this album and four absolute fucking dogs.
Yeah, or complete indulgence.
Things that, you know, and you look at their output and they're like, they're releasing an album every couple of years and it's like, dudes, just fucking take it a little bit slower and release like an album
that will last
the test of time. But, you know, they were obviously so keen just to, like, bounce from one idea to the next that they were like, yeah, let's just whack this out and move on to the next thing.
Yeah, and we pulled up that Muse album, and you quite liked that Muse album last year for exactly that problem. All the ideas went on it. It wasn't. There was no judgment that was made.
I actually love that Muse album for that reason, that it's just bonkers that it's almost like, okay,
it shouldn't exist,
this is a safe... It's like, this is a safe space, guys. No, no ideas. No ideas are outside the square. Whatever you want to do. Well, I want to do a Queen. I want to do a Queen song, but I want to do in this same song.
I want to do industrial metal.
Yeah. Okay.
And you know
we'll do it in the same
White
song.
White guys
then.
Need more safe spaces. That's something we need to encourage.
That's why I like that album, because that album should not exist.
Yes.
That album is just
that
fucking
album has
bonkers.
No reason to exist. It exists, but then again, that's what this is really. I feel like this album and by extraction a lot of late era Beatles gets a disproportionate bump for quote unquote transforming pop music, simply because of the people who were behind it, because it was this massively popular pop band that happened to go off and do this psychedelic experimentation. It's held up as being the equivalent of actual bands that were good at psychedelic rock music, like Cream and Hendrix and people like that. Because if you actually listen to it compared to equivalent stuff that was coming out in period, it was like, no, these guys are just twiddling and doing fucking nursery rhymes, and these other guys are doing actual stuff that's important to the genre.
This is no Cream or Hendrix, that's
no,
for
no,
sure.
No, it's not. In fact, if you have a look at it, Jimi Hendrix released two albums in 1967 that were better than this. Are You Experienced and Axis of Love are better than this. Disraeli Gears is better than this. I mean, fuck, even Magical Mystery Tour, the fucking soundtrack album that the Beatles released, was better than this in 1967.
And I think it's got more of that drugged out psychedelia feel.
It totally does. Now, it does need to be pointed out that the original Magical Mystery Tour album didn't include Strawberry Fields and Penny Lane and some of those tracks on the back end because they were released in the American version. But it's on Spotify, it counts as an album, and it is much richer and deeper in terms of the content. So why are we remembering Sgt. Pepper's when it's got maybe three good tracks on it?
Really good album art?
Iconic album art. That's fair. That's entirely fair.
I don't know, mate. Maybe that's why. Like, sometimes, okay, like, Beatles truthers come at us in our mentions. Like, tell us why.
Come at him in his mentions. I just don't need. How many boomers are on fucking Twitter anyway?
No, that's all right. It might be more Facebook.
But this is the thing. If you've done 12 albums in 7 years, you literally have to put every idea you've ever had onto wax. Mm. Not all those ideas are good. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter if you're McCartney and Lennon. And I feel like a lot of the mythology that's built up around this band was currency that built up in the early days when them and the Stones were the only games in town. And then nobody was everyone was too polite to call them on the fact that a lot of their late career stuff was jizz.
Yeah. Well, there's probably a lot of record and management pressure on them to put shit out.
Well, they hated each other too, by the end. I mean, that's why they broke up in 1970.
You know, like, don't wait enough. Like, don't take 5 years to produce this album. You need to bang out an album every 2 years.
Well, that was the business model in those days. You had to put out at least an album a year.
Yeah, you got to feed the machine. Yeah, so
it was like pumping out a single because that was the only way to make money. But yeah, I mean, the one good thing about, I mean, it was good to, I mean, I had a day where I just listened to old Beatles stuff. I listened to Revolver. I listened to this. I listened to the full, I mean, the White Album is a double album, so it goes for a while. I listened to Magical Mystery Tour. And there's a lot of, you do a lot of skipping because there's a lot of shit, but there is some tremendous stuff in there. It's just that somebody needed, George Martin, I don't know who the fuck was driving the bus then, but somebody needed to just go, no, please stop. This isn't going to work. Nobody had that power anymore.
Even massive Beatle fans, Do you put this album in the top two? I don't think you do. Like, Revolver and the White Album are both better than this, and I think I'd agree with you. The Magical Mystery Tour is a much better example of their experimentation than.
Well, do you remember when we were talking about Quan from Regurgitated using cues off this era of Beatles stuff when he did World of Sleaze and the final track off Unit. The cues aren't from Sgt. Pepper's. They're from tracks of Magical Mystery Tour. They're from Strawberry Fields, and they're from I Am the Walrus. Admittedly, Strawberry Fields was a single that they stuck on the US release of Magical Mystery Tour. But that's kind of a better representation of where their sound was in 1967 than Sgt. Pepper's is.
Yep.
So it kind of, and the thing is also that. The Beatles sort of say, "Oh well, they led this thing into psychedelic music." They fucking did not.
No,
AU Experience came out before this, and by 1968, everyone was clearly moving in this psychedelic blues direction, which is why there's a lot more psychedelic blues on the White Album, and the Stones, who were the arch followers of all, they only ever followed. I mean, their late 1967 album was like a bad imitation of Sgt. Pepper's. They were in that space as well. Well, they then went into a space that was kind of slide guitar and heroin, which is very very Stones, I think.
I have a historical conception that Sgt. Pepper's is like the real psychedelic album of the Beatles. And listening back to it, I was like, okay, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds references drugs in the lyrics, but is the song really that psychedelic? I don't think so. It's a pretty straight down the line pop song.
It's a bit of spaced out vocal effect. That's about it.
But
nothing compared to what Hendrix was doing at the same time.
No, there's nothing here pushing the envelope.
But it's like we said last week, if Ed Sheeran made a grime album, people would think, wow, it's a great grime album because it's Ed Sheeran doing it, not because it's a great grime album.
Which would be tremendous. Actually, I want
to... I would love to see him give it the blood fan. No,
not Ed,
under.
not Ed Sheeran, but who's the other great British pop artist who's hilarious on Twitter? I always forget
James Blunt
name.
Again. Oh no, he's James too old. Blunt. He's too old for that.
I think he has the
he's older than us.
I think he would have the requisite humour and understanding to have a go at a grime album.
I think it would look massively insulting. That's the thing, because we've talked about this before, but the problem is that there can never be an Australian grime or a New Zealand grime or any other country grime, because so much of the identity of grime is hemmed up in the language, the patois of East and South London. It's so much about that migrant experience language. So, and I think if you take that out, it's not grime anymore. It's just beats that sound like grime.
This is the interesting thing, right? Battler recommended some Australian grime in massively inverted commas to me. And I went and had a look at it on YouTube, and I quite like it. But the thing that I find interesting is it imitates the vocal patterns that flow and slide of grime, but it has a very Australian traditional hip-hop beat. And the thing that I find interesting about grime
is that the one you sent me to say, what do you think is this Australian grime?
Yeah, yeah.
Because my immediate reaction was, nah. I mean, they had beats that sounded a bit like it, but I just feel
I thought the beats were very, very standard Australian hip-hop. The thing I really like about grime is it is like a hip hop lyric with a different flow, like that really fast flow,
staccato, offbeat, machine gun kind of flow.
Are more Chemical Brothers than anything that's come out of American hip hop. You know, it's more bleeps and bloops and crazy sort of chopped
together. Big drops as well. It's stuff. Kind of boom. And there's a really big, big thing. Like, do you know, there's a Kiwi lot that are trying to, I saw in my
fucking music listing saying, oh, this is a New Zealand take on grime. And the beats were bang on. They sounded like grime beats, but it was, here you go, choice. And it just didn't.
There's something too laid back probably in the New Zealand accent to really nail a grime sort of edginess, isn't it?
Well, I think it is totally. I think the problem is that it is so tied up with that South London, black, Jamaican and Caribbean influenced language, because so much of the dialect. When you pull apart the lyrics to say Skepta or Stormzy or something, it's not in words that we would use. And you can't have grime if you're not of those people and speaking that language. It's something else if you're doing that. You can have grime influenced, I suppose, or grime influenced beats. But I think it's really lazy for people to say, oh, this is Australian grime or New Zealand grime, or even the Drake's album was fucking Canadian grime.
Yeah.
Because it's not.
Yeah.
Fucking is not.
And look, take the influence, sure, but don't say that you are grime. And I quite enjoyed that Australian stuff, but it was not the same enjoyment I got out of the Stormzy or Skepta album.
But part of that is also the cultural discovery part. It's like, I have no idea what your fucking experience is like. And I'm really interested in finding out what it's like. And I say, and that's a bit of cultural tourism, but I'm interested, and part of my interest in grime is I literally have no fucking idea how you dudes live your life, and I'm fascinated to know. I know from American hip hop how Americans in various various parts of the country, because of course it's geographically variant, live their life. But I'm interested. I want to know, and I don't think. That's why I'm much more interested in Australian and New Zealand hip hop that does its own thing, which is why a lot of and I think you are too, because a lot of the stuff that you've put up as classic albums or stuff you've pointed me in the direction of has been Australian hip hop using its own voice and using its own beats to tell its story.
Which is why I love the Herd Guys, I love Battler, I love Lazy Grey, because it's not trying to be something that it's not. it's their own stuff, and that's what it is. So.
It's homebrewed. And that's kind of that's the history of Australia and New Zealand music. They've taken influence from elsewhere, but they've built their own stuff. I mean, that kind of very Aussie pub rock sound that led to the AC/DC and the Angels and bands like that, and eventually, I suppose, Bad Dreams, was a synthesis of the influences that it had, but it was a new thing. There aren't a lot of bands in the world that sounded like AC/DC in 1975. There certainly were in 1985 by the time they were big.
Speaking of which, have you got new tunes that aren't old bands like what this I pick week, every week?
I have picked album bands that that are putting out their debut album.
Excellent.
So, the first band I want to tell you about is a band called Goodbye June. Now, these guys profile as like a more fun Kings of Leon. The band involves three cousins. But they're a lot more fun than a bit less Cletus than the Kings of Leon. They're basically a hard rock band. The sort of band that would get a run on fucking. I think I saw they were them. One of their songs had got on the EA Sports Madden NFL game. So they are a straight down the line rock and roll band, but particularly sort of a hard rock and roll band. Bit of rootsy influence out of Tennessee. No great pretensions to them, but could be a bit of fun. Their album is called Magic Valley, I think.
Magic Valley it is.
It is colourful. And that's the first band I want to tell you about. Now, the second band I want to tell you about is a band out of Britain. Brexit Britain, or perhaps not, as the case may be, depending on the result of the election negotiations. A band called... I've just forgotten the name. So this is...
Look at that list, dude. Look at that list.
I don't have the thing in front of me. It's Jim Jones' new band. So Jim Jones... had a band in the late noughts called the Jim Jones Review, and it was sort of mentioned in the same breath as John Spencer's Blues Explosion, and then they went quiet, and then they came back, and I know the album's called Supernatural. I think it's like Jim Jones and the Rational Mind or something like that. I will quickly check that because I suck.
Jim Jones and the Righteous Mind.
The Righteous Mind. That's the one.
Supernatural.
Supernatural is the album. So they were. The Jim Jones Review was sometimes mentioned as a comp for John Spencer, but this is a new band. I don't know. I'd never really listened to Jim Jones previously.
It's got a naughty cover.
It hasn't. Yeah, lady with marks over her. With black censorship spaces over her bits. that's probably less... That's technically a new band with a debut album, but... So those are the new albums for the week.
Excellent. Well, for the classic album... I'm going to pick an album that
Beatles Revolver
is half the age of the Beatles album, which still makes it pretty old.
Doesn't it?
It's an album that I count as a classic, but I probably haven't listened to it from start to finish for over a decade, I reckon. And that is U2's Achtung Baby.
Back in a 91. I say back in a 92, still in a room without a view. Thanks very much, Zach De La Rocha. Achtung Baby. So, U2. Mm. We're finally getting to the U2 part of the conversation.
So, thank you, Spotify. I have actually managed to find a non-deluxe special edition.
Super edition, all the B-sides, fucking
yes.
Demos that The Edge made on a fucking ukulele with a tape deck. Get fucked.
I have a 12-track only version of this in the playlist.
And of all those files, and I did this with Soundgarden, I'll go back to my fucking CD collection and find out what's the version I own. How many tracks were on it? which tracks were on that. But Achtung Baby was a really good album. This is not, we're not giving away spoilers here. The other album I'd like to go back and revisit is Pop. Because I know when I listened to it, I thought, that's really interesting, but I'm not sure I like it. And I think I need to go back and go, I didn't really like Zaropa. Zaropa was the 93 album, wasn't it? It was the
I quite like Zaropa. There's a lot of I find that whole run, Achtung, Zaropa, Pop, really, really fucking interesting.
Would you throw how far back would you go? Would you go Rattle and Hum? Would you go Joshua Tree?
No,
and Joshua Tree's 30 years old to pretty soon, I think.
I think Joshua Tree and Rattle and Hum are sort of like they're real, like they are what they knew what they were.
I like Rattle and Hum because it was their first concept album. It was their first. We're going to go and do something that's. We're going to go to Harlem. We're going to get in. We're going to fucking immerse ourselves in the blues, and we're going to do something that's different to the fucking protest songs that they'd done previously. Because really, all they'd fucking done up to that point was pop songs and protest songs. And they'd actually gone outside their comfort zone and done something a little bit more interesting.
Well, I sort of think of Achtung, Zaropa, Pop as their let's really like a holy trinity. We're really
because Achtung was recorded in Berlin, of course.
But I think most people would think of the holy trinity as Rattle and Hum, Joshua Tree. Achtung. I think that's where everyone thinks the sweet spot of the band is. But
Maybe older Gen X's. I don't know.
Yeah. That'd be an interesting thing to find out.
You know what it doesn't involve? Anything that was recorded with a 2 in front of it all the years?
Yeah, well, once they got past Pop, they basically went, hey, it seems that these sort of generic rock songs sell lots of albums. Well, let's do that for the next 20 years.
Like all old people, they got conservative and worried about their fucking pension, and that's what they looked at. And to be honest, because Vertigo and Elevation are perfectly serviceable rock songs, but I don't want to hear anything other, you know, the rest of the album can go fuck itself. They were stadium bangers. They just went into the stadium banger business.
Yeah. Yeah, that they were songs written to be played on big tours to make people hold up their iPhones or lighters, whatever was in period at the particular time.
Well, don't forget they were involved in a big iPod promo.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and to be honest, you know what I reckon? If we went after U2 like we went after the Beatles, I think that would be even less. You know, that would create more unpopularity than any sledging of the Beatles.
Well, look,
U2 fans are fucking jihad.
Let's count the albums in that Sgt. Pepper's is and relate it to a U2 album.
That's
I bet you'd
point.
Find it
because they're you, you'd they're probably about find eight, the I think it's 8 or 9 they're in.
Yeah,
by the
if you go 9 albums into U2, I'm pretty sure you're into Vertigo. And
I think
you're
into Vertigo before then, to be honest. Because what do you got? You got how many before Joshua Tree? There was like 2 or 3 before Joshua Tree. So,
what's the?
And there's Boy. I don't know my early U2 that well, to be honest.
It's Boy. There's Boy, and I think the one before that might be an EP though. Joshua Tree.
I feel like Joshua Tree is like number 3, which makes it Rattle and Hum 4.
Unforgettable Fire,
yep,
1984.
Yep, that's the one. Yep.
And then War was 1983.
Yep.
And October was 1981.
Yeah. Okay, no, you're probably
1980.
You're probably a good shout by saying Vertigo is kind of 8-9. They're at the. But the thing is, though, that when U2 got old, they didn't go, let's experiment with drugs. They just went, let's go completely safe. It's almost like people who get old and realize they have to pay a mortgage and start voting Liberal or Tory, depending on, or National, depending on what part of the world you live in. And that's. Whereas the Beatles got old and went, let's take a shitload of LSD and record bad imitations, record our usual fucking shitty fucking nursery rhymes, but make them a little bit more weird. Bang Bang Maxwell Silver Hammer came down on his head.
I don't see. I listen to Sergeant Pepper's, and I'm just like I've taken LSD. This is not the experience, that I had.
Only a fucking limo would have. Yeah, maybe the LSD wasn't as strong in those days.
Well,
maybe
it
was really
pissed. Sergeant Pepper's is what I would expect if Barnaby Joyce took LSD. That's what it is.
No, there'd be more cattle involved.
Possibly.
There'd be a lot more references to sheep.
It's like if you took a really straight conservative person and gave them LSD, that is what Sergeant Pepper's is. It's like
I'm having massive hallucinations that sit within the structures of our socio-political environment.
You know, whereas, like, in my experience of LSD is more Nine Inch Nails, you know, like fucking my mind fracturing into 100 different pieces.
I would not wish a Nine Inch Nails film clip on anybody if they're having an LSD experience. Sort of headless bodies, pigs on fucking feet, nasty.
I really hope my mum doesn't listen to this podcast. But anyway,
she was your dealer at the time. I mean, what's the problem?
I've got nothing else to say. So yeah, I haven't listened to Uktung in. I'll probably listen to songs. You know, I've walked through a mall or something, and a song has played. But I don't think I've sat down and listened to the album from start to finish.
And
for
it has
a lot of really.
If nothing else, it's got a lot of fucking banging singles on it. The Fly and fucking.
Yeah, but I'm actually interested
other ones
to see.
That I can't remember.
How does it go as, well, even better than the Real Thing 1?
Yep.
Who's Gonna Ride Your Wild Horses?
Oh,
Mysterious Ways.
I had flatmates who used to fuck to that, and they didn't realise it was a song about people who are dying of AIDS. It was like, how is this romantic? Don't fuck one. That's bad.
There's a Jack White cover of a song on this album that's getting a massive run in the daycare drive playlist at the moment, which is Love is Blindness. I found a Jack White cover of it, which is awesome. And
I thought Masturbation was Blind.
That's getting a bit of a run at the moment in the daycare run playlist. So.
Yeah, and some of the non-album tracks, some of the non-single tracks on this, I seem to recall as being really good, like End of the World.
Yeah,
but we will get to that next week. Uktung, baby.
Cool.
And I'm probably going to listen to it again just to remind myself whether it was any good or not.
Look, we'll throw it out because I had someone hit me up on Twitter saying I threw out a fairly rough rugby union take this week, and someone sort of came back.
You've been throwing out. This week Bezo's been driving the Balls Podcast Twitter account very effectively, I would like to say. Live sledging the basketball and all the rest of it, and just chucking rocks at cunts and pointing out that rugby union's fucked. And somebody, and one of my followers, was Will Sinclair, popped up and said, well, we sold out, you know, Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne for the test matches. And I feel like that's not the point. Because you can sell out the grand final, but if nobody turns up to the fucking club games, what's the point? You know, that's the grassroots. Yeah. That's what pays the bills.
But I did like it that he said, oh, look, I love your podcast. And I was like, well, that's cool, guys. You know, I like that we've got followers out there that I don't know exist and say very little until I absolutely sledge the fuck out of your sport from our official Twitter account. But, you know, throw us an RT, throw us out there on Facebook. Let people know that we're there because
look, I don't blame them for not wanting to be seen to be associated.
That's right. That is true.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I think we're doing better analysis of the NBA finals than fucking half the mainstream media in the USA, maybe we could do it with a bit more love.
Given up yet. That's the difference. That's the thing. But it's the other sports. This is the thing. You and I know that we do the NBA coverage because we're interested in it. It's the other sports that everybody else is interested in. So it's
that's right.
And to be honest, it's the music that more people are interested in anyway. So But we do this podcast for our entertainment, not yours. Well, if you get entertained by it, we're thrilled. But the moment we are more focused on your entertainment than ours, the product will probably suffer, I feel.
And hopefully we haven't made all the boomers froth at the mouth.
No boomers have figured out how to download a podcast yet, so I think we'll be fine.
Well, there's Greybeard, but he's much, much older than a boomer.
Well, and there's boomer-adjacent Gen Xers like Adam, but I think he would also agree that while the Beatles were tremendous at making singles, they were not tremendous at making albums.
Mm.
Yes,
I think single is Adam's middle name. So,
do you want to tell his wife?
No.
That seems a bit.
All right. All right, Doc. I'll catch you next week.
Good night, Peter.